This is the Upgraded Life Podcast, and in this episode, I'm going to bring you an amazing story from Jacqueline Phillips. She's an author. She wrote a book to showcase her story, but it's really a powerful testimony of what it means to be at rock bottom and how to work yourself all the way to the top. So let's buckle up and go for a ride on the Upgraded Life Podcast. Hello, thanks for tuning into the Upgraded Life Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Nick Sotelo. The Upgraded Life is my personal project where I help people realize and reach their potential. I've been a professional helper for 20 years. Here's what I'm convinced of. The life that you have right now and the life that you want tomorrow is a product of your personal mindset, mission, and movement. Each episode of the Upgraded Life Podcast is going to give you something that you can do as soon as the episode is over to upgrade your personal mindset. Your mindset informs your mission. Your mission tells you how to move every single day. And together, that is the Upgraded Life. This is from an opening chapter to an incredible book, and it's titled Planting My Seeds. I am a piece of shit, or at least I was. I took 4 years of intense work before I found the euphoria of admitting that out loud and to others. Everything hurt. My heart, my head, my soul, my body. Up until about 2 years ago, I introduced myself as a broken, damaged goods and deflected compliments of praise. It was easier to degrade myself so that other people couldn't do it first. I was a deep sea fisherman casting my hook for pity and praise, but ultimately rejecting all of it because I believed I didn't really deserve it. I built an identity that suited my maladaptive needs and swept my real identity under the rug. And that is the opening paragraph. I just need a paragraph to give folks an idea of what else is going to be in the book. Again, the section is titled Planting My Seeds, and the book is called, oh my goodness, the book is called, as I get there, Comfortably Uncomfortable, and it's written by Jacqueline Phillips. Jacqueline, thank you so much for making the time and being on the show.
Thank you for the opportunity. That's really powerful hearing someone else read my story.
What was that like for you?
It was very retrospective and reflexive. And I immediately went back to that moment when I said it out loud. And that genuine moment of, this is really what I was. And I'm not that anymore. But I have to acknowledge that that was part of me. I'm just glad that I'm not there anymore. But the vulnerability and honesty of it, it packs a punch.
And then you talk about that transformation from it being a source of shame to now when you talk about it, it's almost euphoric, like it's energy giving now. Talk about that transformation.
Shame is inherent when you are unhappy and displeased with your existence. Shame is just a way of existing. And to be able to have taken that and broken it down and figured out the root causes behind it, and then to make peace with those parts of me that weren't so pretty, and then to, you know, polish the stone, so to speak. You know, you can polish a turd. Hey, there I am. You know, to be able to do that work and to come out stronger and say, yeah, you know, that is who I was, and that was a part of my life, but I'm not that person anymore. That person doesn't exist. You know, it's like Taylor Swift when she's talking on the phone. Sorry, the old Taylor's dead. Like, that part of me is dead, but it still did exist. So having that retrospect is, it's really nice to be able to tell people that you can come out on the other side if you're willing to really get uncomfortable.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, I don't want to give away the entire book because obviously I want people to go get the book. I did read most of the book, if not all of it, prior to coming into our time together here. And, you know, I can tell you from a therapist perspective, as somebody who has sifted through a lot of stuff with a lot of people. It's pretty much all in this book, one way or another. It's pretty much all in there. And you know, like I said, the first section of every book, I think it's called, was it Clawing Your Way Back?
Yeah.
You know? And so talk about what rock bottom was for you. And then I'm also interested in what was it that said, I'm gonna, or I have to claw my way back.
So it was in January. This was 5 years ago now. My husband wanted a divorce. I had put my entire life savings into buying a business that I had no idea that I was going to make it work. My car died, and I was incredibly sick with an illness that we still don't quite understand. And I was at a breaking point where I wanted to commit suicide and had it all planned out and was ready to execute it. And I didn't see a purpose in being here. I wasn't helping anybody. I certainly wasn't helping myself. And it just seemed like if I was going to be in this much pain, it was the only way out. My now 14-year-old is the driving factor behind why I'm able to sit here and talk with you today, because ultimately I couldn't control the narrative and I couldn't prevent him from experiencing trauma, which was the whole reason why I was the way I was because of all the trauma that I experienced. And knowing that I couldn't prevent that if I wasn't there, that was that tiny momentary thread that kept me hanging on. Knowing that if I did this, I couldn't go back, I couldn't change the narrative, and I couldn't keep him from repeating the same cycles that I was doing. And as a parent, you always want better for your kids. And even on my hardest days with him, he still saves me. He still gives me purpose and reason, and he's my biggest cheerleader. And he's honestly probably the biggest reason why this book even exists, because he believes that I can do anything, and I'll be damned if I'm not going to, because he believes in me. And I want to show him that if you think you can achieve it, you can. You know, there are things that are within reach if you are willing to extend yourself. So as I was writing it, you know, he would check in periodically and, hey, did you write today? How many words did you write today? You were at your laptop for a long time. You must have wrote a lot of words today. Is it ready? Is she done editing it? He actually is the one that did the cover photo for me, because I'm a full-time photographer, but I'm teaching him how, and I'm my most authentic with him. So it only made sense that if I'm going to be soul-bearing, that he be part of it and he take the picture for me. So it's
fun.
He's a big part of the journey. He's a big motivation behind it, and I want him to know that he can do anything.
Love it.
It's still kind of raw sometimes. It still gets
absolutely
me when I talk about it from time to time.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, I have... First, thanks for sharing that. Right? I mean, you're bearing your soul, not only in your book, but also in this exchange that you're having with me. And so, yeah, thank you. Thank you for that. I know that you've probably already gotten feedback. No, probably, whatever. That the story has helped somebody. And it'll continue to help. You never know. I've done these where I've shared my story, and you just, out of the blue, you'll get an email, you get a text, you get a private message on social media and say, hey, I heard your story on whatever it was, and I had no idea, and thanks, you know.
My favorite is when someone comes to me and says, I thought I was the only one.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to remind myself as well as others, because I'm not perfect at this, but there's 7 billion of us. There's no way you're the only one going through this, but there's somebody out there. And when you're willing to be vulnerable and expose all of the ugliness like I did, it can provide comfort for others. And honestly, it's not going to be a top 20 bestseller. It's never going to be on New York Times, but it's a piece of me that I get to share with others that may help them. And that's the most rewarding part of it all.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so I have a similar story, similar kind of situation where, I'm trying to be a little bit cognizant because my oldest is right around the corner. I think you can hear me, but oh well, we can have a conversation about it later. But when my youngest, who's, you know, 13 now, he was still in the womb. So my wife was still pregnant, and that's where I was in a very similar spot that you were. And, you know, this, the things and just were not lining up for me, and wasn't doing well at work, as I didn't think so, and definitely wasn't doing well at home, you know, in my marriage, you know, as a husband, and wasn't doing well as a father, just, you know, just feeling this total sense of failure, you know, all encompassing. And, you know, I had a night where it all kind of peaked, and I had made the decision that this was it, and then, you know, I wasn't ever going to see the son, the second son of mine, and this isn't about me, but I'll kind of share that, you know, thankfully none of that happened, and I'm still here, and I am part of my second son's life. And but, you know, there's moments where I see him and I'll flash back and think, you know, how could I, you know, thank goodness I didn't miss any of this, right? Thank goodness.
Yeah. So there's moments when you look back and you go, how could I have ever thought that that was a good idea?
Yes. And as your book explains, though, right, when you're in the thick of it, it really seems logical.
Yeah, it seems like the only way out.
And I think that that is something that is difficult for people to understand and to wrap their heads around.
I also think that we don't talk about it in a way that makes it acceptable. You know, there's a lot of taboo and shame. Let's go back to shame. There's more shame. You know, it's not weakness. You know, when you get to that moment and you finally say, I need help, that's when you're your strongest. And I think if we did a little bit of reframing, we could really save lives.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it's because of my personal experience knowing exactly what that was like, you know, and again, you have at least you talked about having been there twice in your life. So I tell people that I've been to the gates in hell and back twice, you know, and but it was because of those experiences that, so I was already at this point in my time, my life, I was already through graduate school. So I'd already had earned the degree of marriage and family therapist, and I'd been doing the work for a handful of years. Right. And so, but what people need to know and, is that at the master's level, you don't get trained in this. You honestly don't. You don't get trained at what is the discipline that's called suicide prevention and intervention. It's not one of the required courses. And
that's terrifying.
Holding a PhD in counseling as I do, where part of the degree that I have is about understanding the exact competencies in terms of learning outcomes for master's level clinicians, I can tell you with authority that it is not part of the program of study at the master's level or at the doctorate level. I didn't learn any more about suicide prevention or intervention at the doctorate level than I did at the master's level. So like you said, that's frightening, but that's the reality of it. It is not a required course. It is not a required learning objective.
Yikes. If anything, we need more people that are trained in that. And there needs to be less punishment for people that come out and say that. I think my biggest fear, you know, bringing that to light was that I was afraid of losing custody of my son. I was afraid that I would lose my business. I was going to lose my friends. By coming clean, I was facing a different type of death.
Right.
And that prevents a lot of people from doing it.
Right. Absolutely. It does. Yeah. And, you know, in my field of public safety, corrections, law enforcement, you know, it can be a career killer. And, you know, I remember one of the times, cause I've done it multiple times now, but kind of early on, I remember giving a talk about it, about, you know, I'll just call it for what it is. I was at church. I was giving my testimony. And I remember we were a small church plant and, you know, maybe 80 people would gather, right? So, but then I remember we had three new families that day. One was a coworker. One was a family that I had been helping as a family therapist. And one was a provider that was at the hospital that I went to. And they were all there that day to hear me talk about, you know, my stuff. And I thought, and I had that moment, like you said, you know, and I thought, oh man, do I just sugarcoat this and get through it? And I thought, nope, I'm just going to tell it as it is and let the chips fall where they are, where they may in terms of that. So that was 12 years ago now. So, you know, as far as I know, it didn't hurt my career. I'm still very close or close enough to that family and that provider. I coach their kids in sports. So, you know, so
amazing how it all works out.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But I understand the fear, and it was definite. It was a choice in that moment, you know, to do this or not. Yeah. So I can see the other side of it too.
I certainly don't want to be known as the suicide chick, the sad girl. I do worry about that from time to time, but I figure there's worse things I could be called. I've definitely been called worse things. So, you know, in the grand scheme of this, if it helps somebody or it educates somebody, I'm willing to make that sacrifice. But I don't think it defines us as people. And I think more people experience it than you'll ever know in your day-to-day life. Mm-hmm. I think the numbers are a lot higher than they're reported. And I think it's a real disservice that we don't take mental health as more of a priority, especially with children. You know, you talk about you working with corrections and youth. And I mean, those are kids that desperately need mental health intervention. And, you know, I could have been one of those kids had I chosen to go that route. I was raised with fear, which was a different motivator, I guess, for me.
Right. Yes. Yeah, you talk quite a bit about that. And there's a lot of things that you talk about that I just really aligned with in your book, for sure. And you know, part of what I'm doing currently is I'm launching a anger resolution course. And so I loved your discussions in your book about anger. I loved your discussions in your book about forgiveness. And yeah, I really liked how you came to those same places in terms of, you know, what the pathway out to, you know, that part of your book's called Taking Back My Life. And the first section there is forgiveness.
And you do. So, it's imperative because you can't let go of anger if you don't give yourself room to forgive yourself. You know, it's not that I wasn't acutely aware of what I was doing when I was doing those things, but I was so angry, I didn't care. So in order to move past the anger, I had to forgive myself and go, you know, I was doing the best thing that I thought I could be doing at the time, even if it wasn't, you know, and sure. It's the same with my parents. You know, I held so much anger and hate, but when I was willing to reframe it and look at it from the perspective of they're not perfect people, they did what they thought was the best they could do with their skill set and what they knew. And it was a little bit easier to let it go and forgive them and go, you know, they tried. They didn't do a great job, but they tried, and it could have been worse. So there's that.
Yeah, and the letters that you wrote that are in your book were powerful to read as well.
They were definitely a challenge to write. I'm sure at least one, if not both of them, have read it by now. I know one of them has because I got the email back about it. Honestly, that was the best part about it, was that it was the motivation to just pull the plug completely, 100%. Be done with it. And it absolutely validated the decisions that I made. So in the end, it was uncomfortable, but it confirmed all of my suspicions and gave me the right motivation for cutting those ties, because the toxicity that was coming from those relationships wasn't going to move me forward. And it's like a cancer. You have to cut it out if you want to recover.
So tell me, what was that process for, I, you know, did, cutting out your mother. And is that, did I gather that right? At some point you said, just no more of this for me. What was that process like?
You know, it started really slow and small. It was, you know, stretching out the duration of how often we'd see each other, or, you know, picking and choosing what text messages I wanted to respond to. It was unfollowing her and unfriending her and, you know, removing her friends to reduce the exposure. And, you know, there's this whole laundry checklist, you know, you have to do to start to remove someone from your life and do it in a way that minimizes conflict, which was really my ultimate goal, because I was afraid that if I had to have the face-to-face confrontation, I wasn't strong enough. I might have been, but at the time when it was happening, I didn't think I was strong enough to do it. So I started taking all of these smaller steps. And then it was, well, I'm not going to answer the phone. I'm going to block her number. I'm not going to respond to text messages. I'm going to block the number. And then it was, it came down that she got a copy of the book and read it and gave me her input on it. And I learned how to block people on Gmail. So yay, Google, for saving me on that one.
Yeah.
There's, you know, other than showing up at my front door, which she did do once, that was exciting. We have no communication, and my life is so much better because of it, because nothing positive ever came from those interactions in my adult life. And I am more emboldened and empowered because I don't want my son to have to be exposed to that. He really is just awesome. I really lucked out with this one.
Wow. Yeah. So how old, I mean, how long ago was that for you?
Well, the final pulling of the plug, was October. So fairly recent.
Yeah. Okay. So not even a year.
And I don't regret it for an instant. I wish it would have happened sooner. I wish it had been smoother and less bumpy, but I'm here. It's not paved. Yes. That's why it's a gravel road.
That's right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I had that kind of, you know, took the path less traveled, right? The road less traveled.
Well, if it was easy, everybody could do it. And I'm hoping that by, you know, sharing my story and, you know, giving insights, it makes it a little smoother for somebody else, because there was a lot of tripping and falling and scraped knees along the way.
Right. So, and again, you can say pass if you want.
Oh, bring it on.
Well, I mean, so I made a similar decision in 2006, and meaning that I decided to remove myself from family of origin relationships, and I was raised by my maternal grandmother, and so she passed away in 2011, and then her daughter, my bio mom, passed away in 2012. So I lived with it for, I still live with it, but, you know, really lived with it for, you know, 6 years. So my offer is, if you have questions, here I am, right? Anything that comes to your mind when you think, I mean, you haven't been a year into it, and that's something that I, you know, had to do and decided to do. Is there anything that you would ask me or have a question for me around that?
You know, I don't, just because I feel like everyone's situation is so different. Mm-hmm. And I think if I wasn't at peace with it, I may have questions, but I am just so damn confident in what I did that I, you know, there's obviously moments where you go, man, I really wish I had this for such and such reason, but I'm never going to have that. Like, it would never be the way you picture it in your head. So there's really nothing to long for.
I think for me, the things that you just don't know until you're in it was, you know, I went to a small private school. And so the people that I went to school with from elementary through middle school and through high school, you know, in a lot of ways, we are like brothers and sisters. You know, and so I would run into parents of friends. We'd run into each other, you know, and they'd say things like, "Hey, how's your grandmother doing?" And I said, "I don't know. You'd have to ask her." And they kind of look at you like, "What?" So I haven't talked to her for about 3 years now.
Right.
And then there's this kind of twinge of judgment that comes out. Well, why would you do something like that? like index of confidence, yeah. right? You know, yeah, you know. Well, and what I rehearsed for myself and what I would repeat is, you know, when people continue to cross boundaries and treat you poorly, you have to remove yourself with them. And unfortunately, sometimes you have to do that with people that you call family too. And it was something to those lines, you know, that you just kind of had to rehearse and be prepared for. So that was something that, you know, I would run into fairly often, you know, it was that kind of that questioning and then that twinge of judgment that would come out because other people just can't imagine it. Right.
Yeah. I do get some people that are, you know, it's usually sort of situations like this where they're like, you know, well, how did that all work out? And, you know, for me, I really don't have much of a connection with my family. I sort of started 86ing people. I'm going to throw a restaurant term.
I like it.
I started 86ing family members shortly after I graduated high school because I no longer had familial obligation and I was able to, you know, move away and get a job. And, you know, I relied heavily on the work thing because I used to work in the hospital. And so I'd say, oh, I'm picking up the holiday shift because it's double pay. Or I just worked a night shift. I'm really tired. There's just, you don't want to hang out with me right now. And then I just, you know, chipped away family member by family member. I'm down to my grandma and she's freaking awesome. So I'm keeping her because she's amazing. But,
yeah,
you know, there was so much damage. You know, it's mm-hmm. kind of like a potted plant. I love examples and allegory. That was great. You know, when you've got dead leaves, you got to cut them off so that you can have new growth. And, you know, I have friends now that are my family and they serve me a better purpose and a better outcome than the people that I have a blood relation with. And when you start to remove the obligation, I think the transition does become easier. I do have the benefit that I don't really see a lot of people that I know that are related to family members. We all sort of did our own thing and went our separate ways. My great-grandmother was sort of the matriarch, and she was the one that by obligation kept everyone together. We would visit her on holidays out of obligation, not out of desire or because we want to see other people. So when she passed, that was like the big exhale for everyone in our family. And that's really depressing when you look at it from that perspective, but it really was. Everyone was collectively holding their breath and felt the need to be there because she was still with us. Once she passed, a lot of ties broke. And it was at a really great pivotal time for me where I could just start going and just cutting left and right. And people were just dropping like flies. And I just kept feeling better about myself and my desires and my goals in life. Even though I was still struggling, I didn't have that baggage behind me waiting for me to fall.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and I can totally kind of relate to that for sure, you know, about how, you know, it's bittersweet. It isn't the way that I would have chose it to be, right? I mean, it's not the way that I prayed for it to be, yet it's the way that it unfolded. And, you know, for me, there was some hope that the birth of our oldest son would kind of chill people out. Right. Because I'm the oldest amongst the grandkids and the cousins. I was the first one to bring the great grandchild, you know, forward into the family. So, there was just kind of this hope that maybe people would chill out. Right. And it did for maybe about 6 months, but then it went right back, you know, and that's where it was kind of just, you know, it was really kind of disheartening, you know, and, it just got to the point to where, like you said, you called it a cancer at first, right? You got to cut it out, otherwise it's going to consume you. And that's really what it was. What it was, it was just became the point to where it's just this is too consuming, and I just, you know, I have to make a tough choice around this. And I would, given the same circumstance, when I look back on it now, I would make that same choice. You know, now if I could go back 10 years before that, you know, and maybe, you know, do something, I don't know, to get people to come to their senses, then maybe it wouldn't unfold that way. But nonetheless, I mean, it's just where it ended up for me.
Yeah, I don't really feel that I would ever have that hope just because it takes two people to evolve a relationship. And if only one of you is doing the evolving and the other one's just kind of hanging out in the muck pond, you're never going to get the relationship that you're looking for. So, you know, grow your legs and walk away.
Absolutely.
It's okay to not it's okay to feel bad that you don't have that, I think. But at the same time, you can't give it any more effort than someone else is willing to give.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think when I look back on it, like even like right now, like I don't get down in the dumps and despair around it. You know, I look back on it like, you know, it just didn't have to happen that way. And I don't feel responsible for it anymore. I think, you know, much like your process, right? I mean, everybody has to work a process through this. Yeah. And so there was a time where I did feel deeply responsible for it.
Or the what if.
But I don't.
What if I have done this differently? What if I had tried harder? Mm-hmm. They'll always be there. You can't let them consume you.
That's right. So let's talk about forgiveness. And I'm telling you, you know, I don't believe in coincidences, and I do believe in synergy. And I'm telling you that this morning when I woke up at 5 to hammer out, you know, the course that I'm going to launch, I talked about forgiveness. I talked about forgiving yourself and forgiving other people. And I don't run into a lot of people who really have described forgiveness work in a way that I appreciate. And you do in your book.
That is quite a compliment. Right, so, thank you. Because I am not a trained or licensed psychologist. Right, I just do the hard work.
Absolutely. You've done the work. And it's evident in just from the book that you've done the work. So I think it's important because a lot of people that I would meet with professionally, they don't have a good understanding of what forgiveness is and what it's about and how to do it and why they should do it. So let's tell them, let's talk about it.
No,
so, what's forgiveness? How do you describe it? How do you define it?
Forgiveness is a 100% unconditional acceptance and letting go of a past aggression, regression, offense. It's 100%. You can't cut it into portions. You can't forgive with condition. It has to be 100%. So it's acknowledging the offense. It's taking responsibility for it. It's figuring out how to prevent it from happening again. It's learning how to do better the next time around. And then it's just letting that shit go. You can't let it weigh you down. It's one of those things where, you know, Ebenezer Scrooge had all these chains, and they were all of those things in life that he needed to let go of. And part of forgiveness is just letting it go. It's your Elsa moment. You have to let it go. Otherwise, you won't be free of it. And the biggest part of it is taking responsibility for your part in it. You know, yes, I lied to people because I didn't believe in myself. And so when it came to forgive myself for that, I had to acknowledge, I did hurt people by doing that. And I hurt myself even more. And this was why I did it. And I don't have to do it anymore. So I'm going to forgive that part of myself because I don't need to go back there. And now that I've moved past that and I don't have to do that anymore, I don't have to carry it with me. So I can forgive and forget and let it be and let it settle into the dust behind me because I'm not going backwards anymore. I'm just going forward. It takes practice. None of this came easily. None of this was like light bulb moments. It was little exercises that I had to practice routinely every single day. It's, you know, it's a muscle, and you don't build big biceps by not going to the gym. You have to work at them every day, and you have to work at them different ways too. Yeah. You know, forgiving.
You can't look at the weights either. You can't just look at
the
weights. No,
you can't just look at it and go, oh, I'm swole today. But, you know, when it came to forgiving others, you know, especially with my parents, I had to just acknowledge the fact that they tried. And for them, that was their best effort. It doesn't mean that it was the best. It doesn't mean that it was the right way to do things, but they tried. And that's all I can expect from anyone is that they try. So I had to practice forgiving all of those things that had built up over 30 something years and going, you know, I don't have to like you. I don't have to love you, but I forgive you because I can't move past you. if I don't 100% forgive you and just let it go. Forgiveness is something that doesn't come in one shape or size. It's not the beanie cap that fits all. It's different for everybody. And you don't get it all at once. And you certainly don't get it in one day. You know, as I was transitioning out of my relationship with my mom, you know, she would, you know, steal a photo off someone else's profile page because my son was in it, and then made it her profile photo, which creeped me out. And I didn't understand it. But I had to forgive her because she's just trying to maintain a connection that she doesn't have authority to have. She's not trying to hurt me. So I have to forgive her for doing something that made her feel good, even if it didn't make me very happy. It's so important. It's just as important as learning to love yourself and to give yourself grace when you struggle. It goes hand in hand with grace. Some days I really struggle. I don't have the best health. And some days it's a chore to get through. But I have to forgive myself and go, you know, I worked really hard the day before. My body's just tired. I'm going to give it my best today. And I'm going to give myself a little grace and forgive myself for not giving 100% today. Tomorrow, I'm going to give 10% more and I will get back to the top. But I have to forgive the fact that some days I'm just not 100%.
Yeah.
So what Jacqueline just shared there about letting it go and the role of forgiveness in life, that was amazing and completely on target. I'm going to pause for a little mid-roll action. I don't usually do this, but here I am doing it. Want to make sure that you, the listener, are aware of two things that I have going on, two offers that I have out there. One is to help men that have anger issues. If you need to get complete control of your anger, I'm your guy. Check the link in the show notes, and you can get more information about that. Project number two that I want to talk to you about is boosting your knowledge around blockchain technology and cryptocurrency. It is the middle of April 2023, and you may not know, maybe you do, but Bitcoin is on the rise. It is breaking through some upper-level ceilings right now, which means that you're going to see a lot of news headlines coming your way. You're going to see a lot of movement coming around, and people are going to say this and that about Bitcoin, which is fine. I'm not here to sell you Bitcoin, but what I want you to do is to boost your education. So I have a Crypto 101 course that is completely free. And if you dive in and put yourself through the course, engage in the community that we have built around it, you will come out the other side knowing exactly what blockchain technology is and knowing exactly what cryptocurrency is and knowing what Bitcoin is. So if you have interest in that, you find yourself asking yourself, what in the world is Bitcoin? I've got an e-course, and I've got a community that is going to help you boost your knowledge around blockchain, crypto, and Bitcoin. So check that out too. In the show notes, find the link for the Crypto 101 course. All right, enough of that mid-roll. Thanks for being patient with me. let's get back to Jacqueline Phillips.
So let's zoom in a little bit. You said a lot in that, and I appreciate hearing your take on forgiveness, and it's an excellent take. And I'll share with you, I don't know if this will end up being the metaphor that ends up in what I'm creating, but when I was thinking about the metaphor for the forgiving others, right? I think I titled it something like letting them fly or something like that. And this may sound silly, but it was what I came up with at 5 a.m. this morning. But to, you know, I imagine this person, and they have these birds, and they're shit birds, right? And they're tied by their little feet to, you know, your body, your waist. You've got them tied, right? And they represent the other people and the wrongs that have happened in your life. And as long as you have them tied to you, they just circle around and they just shit on you all the time, right? And it gets in your eyes and it gets in your mouth and it's all over. And people say, what's wrong with you? And, you know, and you just have to, you got to let them go, right? Because otherwise they're just going to keep doing what they do. And, you know, you don't have anybody but yourself to blame for that, right? And so that's kind of where my silly metaphor went. You know, you got to let them fly. Otherwise, they're just going to keep pooping on you. And that's your fault, right? You're going to keep letting them do that.
And that's the thing, you know, going back to forgiveness and boundaries are a big part of forgiveness too. You know, if you don't stand up to your boundaries, you are not allowed to be upset when someone steps over them, and you only have yourself to blame. I think boundaries are something that we don't spend enough time instilling in people and encouraging them to stand their ground with their boundaries. And that was one of the reasons why my relationship with my parents was so toxic, was because I didn't know what my boundaries were and I didn't know how to stand up to them. And I was afraid of them. And when you have fear, it's really hard to maintain a boundary and then have forgiveness when they shit on you, you know, to use your example.
Sorry.
You know, you can't be mad at anybody when you don't stand your ground because you let it happen, you know, and it's something that I think it transcends, you know, these different topics. It transcends, you know, finding your happiness and finding forgiveness and finding your inner strength, because it all revolves around, you know, where do you draw the line for yourself? And I don't know that we know how to draw that line in the sand until people have just tromped all over it. And sometimes it's overwhelming to figure out what that is. And it does change, you know, and especially the different aspects of your life, you know, as a parent, as a business owner, as a spouse, as a friend, you know, those boundaries do change. And, you know, we're shamed into having them. You know, we're going to go full circle. We're going to go right back to shame where we started. You know, you're taught to shame yourself if you don't let people in, but at the same time, you're giving a part of yourself that you shouldn't be.
Love it. So one thing that you said, Jacqueline, that it's fairly controversial, and so I want you to kind of go back to it and tell us more about it, but you did say it's forgive and forget. And so tell me about that, because some people say, I can't forget that. How do you expect me to forget? So when you said that, what do you mean by forgive and forget?
So I'm never going to forget the things that happened to me, but I'm not going to pull right back to them every time something happens. So, you know, it's like when you're arguing with your spouse, it's not fair to pull up things that you've already forgiven and moved past and throw them into the argument just for the sake of the argument so that you can win. When you forgive and forget, you're letting those things go and not returning to them. That doesn't mean that I'm not going to remember what happened. It just means that I'm not going to pull it back into that sphere of my existence and my everyday interactions. And it is controversial because I'm not really forgetting, but I'm not going to keep it right at my hand's reach where I can pull it in and go, yeah, but you did that. Because that's in the past. And if I go back to it, I'm moving backwards. The confrontation or the argument or the fight doesn't pertain to anything that happened 10 years ago, 12 years ago, 4 years ago, 2 weeks ago. The conflict is what's happening right now, and that's what has to be addressed. So it is controversial. It is, you know, a bit of a play on words, but it's true. You can't go back and pull those things back in just because they circumvent your argument and make you stronger as a person in the position. You know, it's one of those things where the sooner you're able to forget them, the less diluted your argument becomes, especially when you're in a point of conflict and you need to address a topic. You know, if you're losing, just lose. Lose gracefully. We don't teach people to do that. You're in sports. People need to lose gracefully because not everyone can win. And by forgetting those things and not coming back to them, you're still winning, even if you didn't win this interaction.
Yeah. That was one of the lessons that my grandmother did teach me. And I still use it and I still repeat it because I like to talk about the forgive and forget. I like to honor the good things that were there, you know, and cling to those, right? And so one of the things that she did teach me is win gracefully and lose gracefully. And again, the kids that I coach, they know that that's something that Coach Nick says, and it, truth be told, it comes from Grandma Haskell. So win gracefully and lose gracefully is something that I do remember growing up with as an expectation.
Well, it doesn't suit anyone to fight dirty, you know. It's not about win or losing. It's about conflict resolution. At least that's in my important, you know, in my sphere, what I think is more important is a conflict resolution rather than I won the fight, but you didn't because it was still a fight.
Right. So I thank you for zooming in on that. I think that's an important distinction in the for whole, forgive and forget, because in the way that I talk about it, is there's a difference between forgiveness and exoneration. So that's the way that I was learned, that I was trained to talk about it. And so if you think about, again, I'm trained as a marriage and family therapist. So if I'm working with a couple that's up against it, early on, I learned to have this conversation, right? And I talk about forgiveness versus exoneration. So what does that look like? Well, if you imagine your relationship is a ship at sea, right? And it's full of holes. And it's taking on water, right? Forgiveness is always part of exoneration, but forgiveness doesn't have to lead to exoneration. And so forgiveness, if the people decide that, you know, this ship is going to sink and we're going to part ways, okay, so forgiveness is jumping out into our lifeboats and doing it planfully and safely, right? Not jumping into sharks, which... sharks are another relationship. Sharks are addiction. Sharks are, you know what I mean? Reckless spending, whatever those things are, right? Jumping into the lifeboats, going our separate ways, right? That's forgiveness. Exoneration is looking at the ship and looking at each other and looking at the water and saying, nope. And we bail together and we patch together and we figure out how to get, you know, the ship sailing together, and it doesn't do any good to point to that hole that's patched over there, you know what I mean, and bring it back up again, right? Because that's exoneration. So exoneration means the parties involved are saying, we want this relationship fixed, and we're willing to do the work in order to bring it together. And forgiveness doesn't, like I said, doesn't have to lead to exoneration. So that's how I will distinguish between forgive and forget and talk about forgiveness versus exoneration. Your thoughts on that, or how does that land with you?
Well, I like that you direct people towards safety boats with good plans, because so something that I really benefited from was a thing called Dear Man. It's from dialectical behavioral therapy. I sucked at managing conflict, and I had a really hard time with emotional control, and being able to have conversations that would get us to lifeboats rather than have us putting bigger holes in the ship was a big exercise on my part. Because if you can't have emotional regulation, it's really hard to do any of these things. So early on, as I was doing my conflict management, I would actually print out the worksheet and I would fill it out and I would sit I'm still here. You're on mute. That's okay. It's not a perfect system. We're all working together. Yeah. Great. Yep. So I used to have the worksheet here in front of me, and I would say, okay, so this is the conversation that I want to have with you, and I'm going to read off this worksheet because it's going to keep me focused, and it's going to create the result that I want. It's... So I wasn't for a really long time, and when I finally got down to brass tacks and went, okay, I'm spending a good amount of money to get a result. If I don't give you 100%, I'm not going to get my good ROI. So it was not always a therapist dream, because I was a jerk and I wasn't willing to listen. And this took a long time to get here. But now that I'm here, I'm all about it. And I'm all about sharing it. And I'm all about learning from it and expanding my knowledge so that I can help others. If your listeners aren't familiar with it, dialectical behavioral therapy is a dream. If you can find someone who teaches a course. Because it basically made managing my entire existence so much easier.
My internet dropped
because
me.
I was so unconfident and so unprepared for conflict and resolution and just
going?
Managing situations without.
How's it going so far?
Everyone hates me.
I lost you at.
No, they didn't.
And I used to take the worksheets home.
Because I didn't know how to emotionally regulate. But going back to the sinking ship, I learned forgiveness from my husband. Because he forgave me unapologetically and unconditionally. And I don't know how.
You're a therapist's dream.
Going back, I was not.
She actually did the homework.
But he saw something in me. Yeah. And that has always just been an underlying treat that I get to reflect back on and go, you know, he had me at my absolute worst and he still loved me. And if he can love me, I can love me. And I do. And it makes me love him more now that I can love myself and I see who I am and I'm true and real about who I was and what I've done and who I am now and all the great things I can be. Because I do love myself. It is important, and it's not just fluff, and it's not buzzwords. It's that uncomfortable realization that you're actually pretty cool, and you're worth it. You are. Everyone is. Everyone has something redeeming in them.
I just love how, there's a humility that comes from you, and there's definitely transparency. And I just love that you are pointing us back at every opportunity to its work and its process, and it doesn't happen easily, right? And I think that in today's social media drive-up microwave society, meaning that if it doesn't happen within about 3 minutes, then people aren't interested. I think in your book you talked about, again, Netflix. You don't even have to push the button. You just wait for it and it'll play the next one for you.
Yeah. I think if I were anything other than transparent with people right now, the book would be fake. And that's not what I'm here to peddle. I'm not a celebrity. I don't have unlimited resources. I don't have a team behind me. You know, I swapped vehicles with my husband. I did my makeup in the car. I haven't washed my hair, but it was time for the record. So here I am. It's real life and it's okay to not be perfect in it. And I want people to see that, you know, you don't have to be perfect. You just have to try and show up and do your best. And even if you don't do it right, you can do it again tomorrow. It's 24 hours. Nothing's permanent. It's all temporary.
Yeah, definitely love it. You have, I'm just going through your book, right? And you have another section in there, which caught my eye, because I talk a lot about this too, is self-care and what self-care really is and what it's really not. And again, the way that you wrote about it, I was like, yep, that's what I think and say too. So self-care, tell us what people think self-care is versus what you think it's really all about, because I think it's very different.
Self-care is what Instagram is peddling in a pair of leggings that make your butt look really good, or a bath bomb that looks like a unicorn shitting a rainbow. What self-care really is the investment in finding what brings you real joy and real relaxation and relief in a world that tells us that we have to go, 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 and that burnout is acceptable and that it's entirely appropriate to hate yourself and your existence. For me, self-care was very uncomfortable because I wasn't used to investing in myself. And that's what it is. It's an investment in yourself and really digging deep to find out who you are and what you like. And, you know, as I was going through this process, I didn't really know who I was. I was a mom and I was a wife and I was a business owner, but who was Jacqueline? You know, I had the lies that I peddled that Jacqueline was, but that wasn't Jacqueline. So when I really started to unearth this person, you know, it was, I really like my feet in the sand, even though I live in the desert. I don't have a real beach here, but there's a little slice of Tempe Town Lake that has like a little beach piece. And when I'm really, really in need, I will go drive out there and take my shoes off and stick my feet in the sand. I don't have to stay long. I don't have to be there for, you know, an extended period of time. But I invested in that little bit of time to do something that brings me joy and brings me back to ground. I like houseplants. They make me happy. I love that they provide oxygen, and I love learning about them because I love learning. And during COVID, they were the rage. And, you know, I got two free ones at Lowe's last night and I was the happiest person in the world. And it wasn't, you know, something that was peddled to me on Instagram, although you can buy them there. I like growing things. I love, you know, farm to table, and I love reusing my vegetables because you can regrow onions in your kitchen sink with a little bit of water. Like, that whole process excites me. So that became part of self-care. And I love sharing my self-care because I can include other people. So I love paddleboarding, and it's my zen. It's like going to the gym. The world doesn't affect me. And when I can bring other people in and share my joy with them and watch them light up and go, oh my gosh, that was amazing. That's feeding me too. That's refilling that cup that is so often empty that we're expected to continue pouring from. Yes, you can buy things, but you don't have to spend a dime to do self-care. You just have to figure out what fills your cup.
Yeah, I think that's great. What's a wonderful distinction. As I was listening to you describe that, what came to my mind was self-care is, and I'm hesitant to say this, it's more than doing, but self-care is doing things that gives us life. It's life-giving. Where I think what gets peddled is self-care that's self-indulgence, self-care that is do this thing to help you forget about your life for X amount of time, you know, and I don't think that's self-care. I think that's self-delusion.
Yeah. You know, the eat that slice of cake, you do you, that doesn't fill your soul. That just fills your belly. And that's a fleeting sensation because sugar is a chemical that's like cocaine.
And then you wake up the next morning hating yourself right?
Yeah. When you do self-care, you're supposed to feel better, not worse. So that's a good judge if whatever you're doing is actually
and feel
self-care.
Better about it the next morning, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You can do the activity and feel good about yourself repeatedly.
Yeah.
That's a good indication. It's an action or an investment in time that does not produce a result for anyone but
yourself.
And
that's okay, right?
It's important. We're like houseplants with just emotions. We need certain things to grow and thrive. And if we don't do them, then we shrivel and die.
And that can be, and again, you don't have to own this if it doesn't apply to you, but that can be particularly difficult for moms to hear, right? To do things that's just for me, and I don't have to feel bad about it. I don't have to feel guilty about it. You're shaking your head, so maybe I'm speaking some truth there, right?
I'm really bad about that. It helps now that my son is older, but when he was much younger, taking time away from him, I thought I was a bad mom because I'm supposed to be there 24/7 and I'm supposed to be there for his every whim and need and want. And that's my job. And you can't do a good job if you're burnt out as a mom.
Can't pour from an empty cup.
You're not doing anybody any service when you're angry and bitter and hateful. It's okay to recharge your batteries. You recharge your cell phone every night. It's okay to recharge yourself. It makes you a better mom. Your kids will like you more.
Right. And everybody else will too.
That's just an added bonus. Okay. I just want my kid
again,
to
there's
like
that
me.
Honesty and that transparency. Screw the rest of you. I just want, as long as my kid likes me, I'm good to go.
Yeah. Especially because he's getting older and I'm not nearly as much fun anymore. This teenage stuff is weird. I only have the one, and I'm sure I'm not doing it right, but I'm certainly giving it 100%. And the teenage thing is weird between hormones and the fact that I'm a girl and he's a boy, and I don't play video games, and that's really what COVID has left him with.
Yeah, that's for sure. It's been quite a 2 years for us, two school years at least, for sure. You know, it's been about 3 or 4 years ago, 3 years ago, that I made the hard pivot out of my professional identity away from being a mental health counselor into a life coach. And I know that you've worked, part of your story is you did some work with a life coach. And one of the things that I came across in terms of a concept in the personal development world, because that's what feeds life coaches, right? Personal development world feeds life coaches, is, you know, life is happening for you, not to you. And so, again, when I'm looking at some of the titles in your book, you know, setbacks happen, depend on yourself, quit apologizing, you know, to me, those are going to speak to that idea that life is happening for you and not to you, meaning, you know, we may not have wished these things to happen, you know, in our lives, but they're there. So what are you going to do about them? How are you going to respond? That's what you're responsible for. Your thoughts on that idea of life is happening for you and not to you?
The only thing you can control is your reaction. I mean, I didn't ask for life to happen the way it did, but it did. So I can either let it mold me, or I can stop and accept it and go, that's not my narrative, and retell the story the way I want to tell it so that I exist in a world that makes me happy and fulfilled. It's really empowering when you can take that moment and pivot and go, you know, this isn't what I want anymore, and I'm going to take control of it. So it's important to distinguish, you know, this is your life to live, and how you control and respond to it is really the only thing you've got in this world. So teaching yourself to respond in ways that fulfill you rather than defeat you is your best offense on the defense.
And for people to hear that, they hear that all the time, right? They definitely hear it from me. There's going to be people that are going to hear this podcast and they're not, they haven't read your book yet. And so they're going to be thinking to themselves, yeah, that sounds easy for you. You must have had an easy life. Right? And but I'm telling you, folks, again, read the book. And this lady has seen a lot of stuff in her life. And so when she's telling you that it's your responsibility to determine how you're going to respond to what life gives you, she's telling you because she's lived it. Right? She's experienced it. So hit us with a little bit of reality in terms of some of those things. We already heard about, you know, what it was like to think about not being around anymore, but give us a little snippet about something that you really had to work through that probably would have taken out, you know, other people in the same circumstance. You've had medical issues.
I do, and I think that's where I want to go with it, is that, you know, you have to advocate for yourself because nobody else will. It's not anybody else's responsibility. Funny story, because we brought up the medical thing. I actually went and saw a surgeon on Tuesday. I have to have work done on my feet. And it was a new doctor.
Your feet are bothering you too, on top of all everything else?
So I have a disorder that causes my connective tissue to break down. So my ligaments and tendons just kind of fray like jute rope. I've got a dead person in this elbow, and I have a cow in this elbow, and I have beautiful scars. But my feet are next on the butcher block. And so because this is a different surgeon, I had to go. And, you know, in my head, I was ready for war, because most of the time on paper, I look great. You know, if you met me on the street, you'd never know there was anything wrong with me. But there is. And to get people in the medical field to listen to me is usually a fight. And it's a series of appointments. And it's, you know, I have to bring my charts and I have to bring my labs and my x-rays. And I have to go, look, I know the person sitting in front of you looks fantastic. I'm falling apart and I need your help. And it's exhausting. And I just talking to the nurse in the room, I was already breaking down, because this battle has been going on for well over 2 decades, and I'm exhausted. Every new doctor sends me into panic. And I got here and I told him what was going on, and I told him all the things that I had done prior to coming and seeing him. And he said, okay, well, let's get MRIs and let's get it scheduled. And I went, wait, what? That's it? He goes, but you already did everything. You have it all right here for me. I go, yeah, but are we going to fight? He goes, what? And I said, I've been fighting you in my head for a week because I thought I was going to have to fight tooth and nail for you to listen to me. And he goes, well, I'm really sorry that we had to have a fight, but no, I think you're good. And we just need to get some MRIs so I know what I need to fix in there. I wasted a whole week fighting someone in my head. And that was the dumbest thing. That's why I keep coming back to the whole exercise and the building of muscle and the repetition and doing the work, because I'm not 100% at this. And I had to learn how to advocate for myself, and I had to learn how to stand up for myself and go, you know, you're just not listening. I said, you're either on my team or I'm finding somebody else. And that's okay. It's okay to tell people no. That's part of that self-advocacy. I tell that story because quite often what you see is not always what you get. And I love the quote, you know, just because someone looks okay on the inside, on the outside, doesn't mean they're okay on the inside. We're all fighting a battle. And it's really true. And I think we forget that when we feel that we are being offended. And I think that we forget it when we get busy and we blame others for problems that we have. But at the end of the day, I don't know your story. So it's not fair of me to be unkind, because you may be going through your darkest moment. And I think if we could all just be a little kinder, because it could be anyone's darkest moment, maybe we wouldn't have so much.
Well said. Yeah, look for ways to be light in the life of others, whenever possible.
Sometimes in the dark, that's all we need is just a little flicker of light,
right,
to know
where the next step is sometimes, right? Yeah, absolutely. This has been a fun conversation, and I'm so glad that our paths crossed, and I'm glad that I got to read your book. You can definitely depend on me to promote the heck out of it, and maybe with permission, borrow some of it as I'm, like I said, the things that you wrote about forgiveness and, you know, were right in line. I was like, yes, I have somebody else that thinks, you know, like I do around it. And so
I would be honored and delighted, mostly honored.
Awesome. And so kind of a pat question that I ask most people that come on this show is, Jacqueline, the term mindset, what does that mean to you? How do you define mindset?
Mindset is my game plan. It's how I'm going to soldier through whatever I'm up against. Whether it's figuring out how I'm going to spend a day off, because I don't get many of them, or how I'm going to get through the 8-hour wedding when both of my feet absolutely hate me and I have to perform at 100%, even though I am dying inside. Mindset is the game plan that gets me through whatever I'm facing.
We talked about it before we officially got going, so people may not have caught, but you know, part of what you do for income is you're a photographer, and you have a wedding planning business?
I actually own a venue. So the photography is my passion, and it's where my heart belongs.
So you have the book, and where is it available? Where can people get it?
So you can purchase it in print on Amazon.com. You can download it for free with Kindle Unlimited. You can download it as an Audible, and I can whisper sweet things in your ear and empower you on your day.
Oh, nice.
It is, which is weird, but that's a whole other story. It's a short book. It's a very quick read. I get really intimidated by big books. I don't like big books. I will not lie. Thanks for laughing. I tell a lot of lame jokes.
Yeah.
But I do. I don't have a lot of free time. So if you throw something that's 400 pages at me, I'm like, maybe later. But with Audible, you can pop it in. You can get the kids to school and be charged and energized and ready to go. If you pick it up, yeah, it's in 3 sections. But honestly, you can start any chapter and pick it up and put it down. And every time you read it, as you're going through life, something new will pop up. I compare it to a bottle of soda. You know, every time you open it, the bubbles come up to the top and something new is there for you. It's like that with the book. Every time you open it up, there's something new. It's something different. You'll be at a different place in your life, and it will hit you a little differently. And it's for anybody and everybody that just wants a little more oomph to get through their day and feel a little bit better about themselves and to make peace with their lives. Because life is short.
Absolutely. And as much as we spent going through sections of the book, there's entire sections that we didn't touch on that are equally as powerful, that, you know, it just kind of conversation flows where it goes. But there's, you know, every section is well done. And it, like I said, it's apparent to me that you did the work. You had great help along the way too. And you talk about what that was like. And so that's a testament too, for people who are listening. Can you be helped? Yes, you can be helped. It may not happen the first time, though. And getting help is a process itself, right?
Oh, yeah. You, not every counselor or life coach was the right fit. I definitely, it was not a one size fits all. I definitely had to try people on and test the waters and be okay with saying this is not the right fit.
Yeah, I think that's important for people to know. And, you know, as you were saying with your medical provider, even in the places that you're seeking help, you know, whether it's counseling, therapy, whatever you want to call it, life coach, advocate for yourself. If you're not getting the results that you want, need, or expected from the process, let your provider know. Let them know. Right.
Yeah. They're not mind readers. They right. can't do it right yeah, if you don't tell absolutely. Them that they're doing it wrong.
Jacqueline, and I don't know, you know, where you're at with this, but is there a way, are you open to people contacting you, or is there a way how do they find you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So there is a website, grownupgrowingpains.com. I actually have a link to the Dear Man worksheet that I referenced earlier. The actual providers that I use are listed there. You can message me through Instagram, which is grownupgrowingpains. Yeah, I post lots of useful, helpful things because I think everyone should have access to resources to better their lives. I throw some humor in there. I'm very brutally honest there too and tell you about my struggles and my successes because we all need somebody to help us get through this life. We're not meant to be a one man.
Jacqueline, thank you so much for being on the show. Thank you so much for sharing your story. And I know that somebody is going to come across this and you are going to be that light for them. That's going to help them take that next step. And I just know that that's the truth. It's going to happen.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. And thank you for the interaction. It was lovely.
No problem. Hope to do this again.
Yes, please.
This is definitely one of those conversations where I just wish it kept going. I try to keep these down to about an hour, but this is one where I felt like it could have kept going and would have continued to bring value well beyond the hour mark. But nonetheless, it was just an hour. I hope you got something out of that. I hope Jacqueline's story inspired you. If it did, here's two ways that you can show the world that Jacqueline's story moved you, inspired you. One is go get her book. Her book is called Comfortably Uncomfortable. The subtitle is The Road to Happiness Isn't Always Paved. And I think that subtitle was well represented in what you heard from her in our discussion. You can find that book on Amazon, and I'll be sure to put the link to the book in the show notes. If you want to show support to her, go over and buy that book. The second way that you can show that this episode moved you, inspired you, is to share it. Like it, find it wherever you listen to the podcast, leave a review. You can leave reviews now on Spotify. That's pretty awesome. So if you're not listening to this on Apple, you can find it on Spotify and you can leave reviews there. But do that if you found this episode to be helpful to you. Share the episode. Leave a comment somewhere about what stood out to you. That's two ways that you can show encouragement to both Jacqueline and to myself, and both of us would greatly appreciate that. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Upgraded Life Podcast. This show doesn't exist without you, the listeners, and so I appreciate each and every one of you. If you want to show your appreciation back to me and to this podcast, there's a couple ways to do that. One way is to be subscribed to this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. If you are an Apple user, you can go over to Apple Podcasts and leave me a 5-star review. All of those things help. And now I want to talk about two projects that I have going that are out there that I think are very important if you're the right person for them. So the first project is my anger resolution program, and this is for men, fathers, that own businesses that have anger that's completely out of control. And if that's you, I have developed a program specifically for that so that you can get complete control of your anger, that you can rebuild the relationship with your loved ones, and that you can make your business more profitable. That is all contained in my anger resolution program. If you want the info about that, check out the show notes, and there'll be a link there for you for anger resolution. The other project that I have going, which is equally as important in my mind, and it's a lot of fun, is based around blockchain and cryptocurrency education. So if you've listened to this podcast this year, in 2023, you will have heard that several of them have focused on cryptocurrency, and that's not by accident. That's been a big part of my free time, my extra time, and my financial strategy over the last 18 months or so. So I have founded, together with some partners, an organization called the Ultimate Crypto Startup, and we offer crypto education. Our Crypto 101 course is completely free, and it is designed for the person who knows traditional finance and they're curious about the world of decentralized finance. So if that's you, but you don't even know what a Bitcoin is, you don't even know what blockchain is or how blockchain technology works, Crypto 101 is exactly what you need to build that knowledge into you, so that way you can look at the world of decentralized finance from an informed vantage point. So Crypto 101, if you want info on that, again, look in the show notes and you will find the link for that course. All right, my listeners to the Upgraded Life podcast, I'm going to sign off for now, and I'm going to urge you to do something as soon as this show is done to upgrade your life, to boost your mindset. Take action today.